Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
I am Pat Rulo, and I will be your hostess, your healthcare navigation hostess, where I will spend the next hour serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. As usual, today's show is chock full of tips and tools to help you stay safe during any healthcare or hospital encounter. What do seat belts and smoke detectors have to do with healthcare safety? Our guest will enlighten us with his thoughts on how to think about patient safety in a bit of a different way. So sit back in your favorite chair, take notes, and enjoy your quiet time with me. But now let's discover the hospital hazard of the week. Not recognizing the need for an advocate. I challenge you to be your own advocate. A wise nurse attempting to tell us something without actually saying it offered this advice to my mom about 3 months into her hospital ordeal. The enormity of her words hit me as a blast of freezing cold air. She knew the faults of the system. She knew that if we did not try to save ourselves, we might not make it. Until that instant, I don't think I ever even used the word advocate. Well, what is a patient advocate? Well, even though I used to skip my Latin classes during high school to go hang out with my friends at Mobby's Hamburger Shop, I still managed to learn a few things. The word patient comes from the Latin word, and it translates to someone who suffers. As an adjective, the word means to bear or endure without complaint. And the word has chilling synonyms: uncomplaining, long-suffering, forbearing, resigned, passive, and calm. Should we really behave as patient patients? Do the submissive-sounding synonyms set the stage for their unconscious fulfillment? The word advocate comes from the Latin root vox, which means voice, making a patient advocate the voice of someone who suffers. That sounds like a heavy-duty responsibility, doesn't it? The National Patient Safety Foundation answers the question, what is a patient advocate? An advocate is a supporter, believer, sponsor, promoter, campaigner, backer, or spokesperson. It is important to consider all of these aspects when choosing an advocate for yourself or someone in your family. An effective advocate is someone you trust, who is willing to act on your behalf, as well as someone who can work well with other members of your healthcare team, such as your doctors and nurses. Who can be a patient advocate? A husband, wife, daughter, son, grandchild, neighbor, friend, coworker. In other words, anyone, you and me. You don't need to be trained in medicine, but you do need to be aware, willing to research and learn, and able to speak up on behalf of your friend or loved one. So what exactly does an advocate do? An advocate's job is to ensure continuity between people, departments, and facilities. Every hospital department, floor, or wing is its own microsystem or culture where the staff works together for similar purposes, using particular equipment and procedures to treat patients with similar problems. And because microsystems are unique little entities and are fairly independent of the larger hospital system, it can be difficult for one system to seamlessly link to another. This rift can cause fragmentation of care, and in a hospital setting, patients move from one system to another, for example, from cardiac surgery to intensive care to rehabilitation. And the handoffs or the transitions between these microsystems or departments can be dangerous. Quality of care can change as it crosses into a new microsystem, and vital information can be miscommunicated or perhaps not communicated at all. It's important to recognize this lack of cohesion between these systems. How can you be a patient advocate and be effective? The answer to that might take a while, but let me share some brief ideas. And of course, there is much more detail in my book, Speak Up and Stay Alive. Number one, have your patient introduce you to the doctors and nurses in charge. Let them know that you will act as the advocate and to allow your questions and concerns as if coming from the patient. Two, understand your patient's wishes in the event of life support. Read and review all signed advance directives with your patient, including living wills, power of attorney, or healthcare power of attorney paperwork, organ donation forms, and do not resuscitate orders. 3, to minimize the chance of conflicting orders from specialists, have one doctor coordinate your patient's treatment. Ask the name and title of every caregiver and ask how they fit into the caregiving team. 4, know the time of day that the doctor or team makes their rounds. This tiny amount of time holds an entire day's worth of information. Find out the plan for the day, any medication changes, test results, or changes in diagnosis or treatment plans. Your patient may be asleep or groggy. This is your time to shine. 5, shift change is a highly dangerous time. Mistakes happen during these handoffs, and as an advocate, use this time to inform and remind the new shift of any important changes or circumstances surrounding your patient. And if you can't be there, leave notes on the bed tray and call a few hours after the shift change to make sure that the new team is well informed. 6, stay with your patient during all trips out of the room, including gurney or wheelchair visits to radiology, testing, or procedures. 7, question new medications before allowing your patient to take them and keep track of all medications, what they look like, their name, dosage, and time to take them. 8, make sure the staff wears gloves and watch for good hand hygiene. 9, keep copies of test results organized in one folder. And finally, use the Speak Up and Stay Alive patient safety logs to keep track of everything that happens. What may seem unimportant today may become a pivotal piece of information in the future. And you can find those at the speakupandstayalive.com website. Can you advocate for yourself? Yes, and you should. However, when you're sick and in a strange place, you may not have the awareness to think about microsystems, handoffs, and communication mishaps. And that is why it is important to have someone with you or have a rotating group of people with you, watching everyone and everything, questioning, reading, researching, and coordinating. That is the job of an advocate.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Dr. Barry Busy's office. This is Rush L.
Hi, Rush L. This is Pat Rulo, and I had some blood work done a few days ago, and I'm calling to get the results.
We only call if they're normal, so if you haven't heard, they're probably okay.
Well, that doesn't make me feel very comfortable. Will you have the doctor call me with the results either way?
Sure, okay, bye.
Hello, this is Pat Rulo again. I called a few days ago to get my blood test results. Hi, can someone call me back with my test results? Hello, Dr. Very Busy, Rush L, someone? Has your doctor ever sent you to the lab for testing? Let's say for a blood workup. I'm sure most of you have experienced that. I know I have. Then for days, I wait and hope the doctor calls with the results. No, sorry, honey. Can't go out today, or tomorrow, or the next day. The doctor might call. Or sometimes I've been told, we won't call you if the results are normal. And then again, I wait and wait, and don't hear anything but the voice in the back of my head that says, are the results okay? Or did Dr. Very Busy simply forget to call? Has this happened to you? Well, good news. A final ruling issued by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Yes, I know. It will give patients direct access to their laboratory results instead of having to get them through a doctor's office. 7 states and the District of Columbia already require labs to give patients their data directly. 13 states expressly prohibit it. 7 allow it only with the healthcare provider's permission. And 23 states have no policy on it, according to Health and Human Services. Well, the new rule supersedes and overrides all those state laws, and the final rule is effective April 5th, 2014, and covered entities must comply by October 2nd, 2014. Now, clinical labs must give patients access to their own lab test results upon request without going through the physician who ordered them. Before the revisions, the lab could release test results to three types of individuals: the person authorized under state law to receive or order those results, typically a physician, the person responsible for using the test results for treatment, and a referring lab that requested the test, but not to you, the patient. Under the new rule, labs will be required to provide patients copies of their lab test results within 30 days of a request. Be mindful that requests may have to be put in writing, and you or your representative may have to cover the cost of copying or emailing the test. Not sure why it would take 30 or more days to furnish someone's test results, but I suppose it's in the step in the right direction. Yeah? Well, some patient advocates and healthcare organizations have long seen the laboratory regulations as unnecessarily preventing patients from playing a more active role in their healthcare decisions. I think we'd all agree with that. Because as we discuss on this program, information like lab results empower patients to take the lead, to track their health progress, make decisions with their healthcare professionals, and adhere to important treatment plans. And why is this important? Because studies show that between 7 and 26% of abnormal lab results are not communicated to patients in a timely manner, with potential adverse consequences for the patient's health. Now, I'm sure that this is not done on purpose, but doctors' offices get busy, and I said before, many patients assume their test results are normal if they don't hear, and that's not always the case. Physician groups, including the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Family Physicians, had expressed concern that patients might overreact to the results without a doctor's interpretation and urged that the data carry a disclaimer. And I think it's a lot safer to overreact than not to react at all and potentially miss a serious medical problem due to lack of communication. And no one is saying that this removes the responsibility from the provider to communicate the results with us. You can still get your results directly from your provider. This is another layer of safety. Now we can see the results with our own eyes, do some research, and speak with our provider in an intelligent and meaningful way. Another positive outcome of having copies of your results lies when moving between doctors or getting a second opinion. Now you won't have to spend time and money doing the same tests over and over again, which, depending upon the test, may carry its own set of risks. The bottom line? Missed test results compromise patient safety, and we as patients should not expect to sit back, relax, and hope for the best. Yes, we should demand transparency in healthcare, but at the same time, we should be willing to be active participants in our health. So the next time you have a test done in a lab, ask for a copy of your results. Start a file or keep them in the patient safety logs available at our website, speakupandstayalive.com. And if you have any questions about the results or how to interpret them, call your doctor. Unless you are a medical person, you're not expected to understand all of the results, but at the very least, you should have a copy of them. And now you can. And remember, you heard about it here on Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. Hello, doctor, very busy. Rush L. Someone?
Sure, okay, bye.
Speak up and stay alive. Five simple words that address a complex problem, and that is your safety when it comes to every healthcare or hospital encounter, or the safety of your family and friends. These words need to be in your mind and on your lips. And to help with that, I wrote the book Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Hospital Survival Guide, on the recommended reading list of the U.S. Army's Medical Department Office of Quality Management. And it should be on your reading list too. Get a copy for yourself. Give some away as important gifts. Bring the book to the hospital with you. Lay it on the tray table. Now, without saying a word, everyone knows that you are an e-patient, equipped and eager to get out unharmed. You can purchase online for only $19.95 at the website speakupandstayalive.com or call me and order by phone 440-725-5462. That's speakupandstayalive.com or 440-725-5462. Speak Up and Stay Alive. The book tells you how, and I hope you do. Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio is proud to introduce our most recent sponsor, Zoar Village Golf Course. Find out more at speakupandstayalive.com.
For years now, a lot of you have been driving down I-77 to play at Zoar Village Golf Course. Thank you for the 40 years of support. And if you haven't been here, we'd like to invite you to come see why we've been called a must-play course for Northeast Ohio golfers. Superintendent Eric Crone's greens are always stellar, too. The pro shop is stocked and the snack bar features great food. Check us out at zoarvillagegolf.com.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am Pat Rulo, your guide and hostess, here with a guest with so much passion and who thinks about things differently. I can't wait to share him with you. After litigating medical malpractice cases for decades, Lee Tilson was drafted into the patient safety movement by medical errors that adversely affected his son and that killed his father. Listed in the best lawyers in America, Lee has been a frequent public speaker, has written numerous articles and book chapters, has presented at grand rounds, and has taught health law, was invited to a World Health Organization meeting on patient safety, founded the Birth Trauma Litigation Group, and is a philosopher whose core value is people matter. Welcome to the show, Lee.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Lee, before the show, you and I briefly talked about patient safety today, and you shared with me your viewpoint that when we look at the poor progress in the field of patient safety, maybe we need to ask if we are thinking about the problem correctly. What did you mean by that, and can you give us some examples?
Sure. Well, anytime you throw the kind of resources at a problem, like patient safety, and by resources, I'm talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars, all kinds of private agencies, staff people at virtually every hospital in America, a quantity of medical articles that are published every week on patient safety or quality of health care in some way or other, the resources that have been poured into it are staggering. When you look at the data about how outcomes are being improved, you see some improvement, but it's really quite minimal. I have my own little problem-solving checklist that I developed after being a philosopher. First rule is don't reinvent the wheel. If somebody solved the problem, see what works. See what worked in the past. As it turns out, the anesthesia closed claims project for a tiny, tiny fraction of the money virtually wiped out anesthesia malpractice in the United States. In 1985, the ASA got together with the University of Washington in Seattle and about 38 insurance carriers, I'm told. For less than $250,000 a year, they funded this project that has essentially eliminated anesthesia malpractice as something that can happen to us as patients. And I remember back in the early 80s when practically every week I'd read about some astronomical anesthesia malpractice verdict. I haven't seen a news report of an anesthesia malpractice verdict in at least probably 6, 7, 8 years. And this problem has been solved. I would think that it would at least be rational to say, what did they do that we're not doing? And have they already invented this wheel, and do we need to find out what they're doing? Because it's a tiny, tiny fraction of the money that we spend every year on patient safety in the United States. I have a few other perspectives to offer, but my first and most important thing to say is, let's think about how we're supposed to think about solving problems. The first rule is, if somebody's already solved the problem, see what they did. And we're not doing it.
So the Anesthesia Closed Claims Project was brought about because that was probably the top reason for malpractice cases. And they then got together and they redesigned what?
Okay. Everything. But they had one particular starting point, and it's a starting point that most of patient safety, so far as I can tell, tends to avoid. The starting point was malpractice cases, and they would start off with a malpractice case, and then my understanding is what they did is they made it impossible for the injury to occur in the way that it had occurred. It was not just trying to prevent errors. It was trying to prevent injuries. Here's an example. Back at the time, there used to be two very different kinds of ventilation machines for surgery. On one machine, to increase the oxygen saturation level for the patient, you turn a knob to the right. On the other machine, you turn the knob to the left. And it's a setup for an error. It's a setup for somebody to get asphyxiated, because sooner or later, as long as that happens, somebody that's been trained on one machine is going to be providing oxygen to a patient, ventilation for a patient during surgery on another machine, and somebody sooner or later unconsciously is going to make a mistake. What I was told by the staff at the Anesthesia Closed Claims Project is they got everybody in a room together, the manufacturers, the devices, etc. And they said, look, as long as this is true, this is a setup for somebody to have a very serious brain injury or die. And it's been happening. It's happened before. It's going to happen again. What can we do to see it doesn't happen anymore? And they understand that human error is inevitable. So they tried to design the procedures, equipment, etc., so the patient's protected even when those things happen. Nobody wants to commit an error. Nobody wants to make a mistake. The analogy that I use is I use seatbelts. If I look at the great safety inventions of the 20th century, right at the top of my list are seatbelts and smoke detectors. And if you think about them, seatbelts don't prevent driving errors. Smoke detectors don't prevent fires. They don't prevent kids from playing with matches. They don't prevent negligence or kids flipping lit matches each other. Belts and smoke detectors don't prevent any kind of human conduct in and of themselves. What they do is they prevent injuries. And what I've tried to design, and I've talked with you about it, is I've tried to sort of invent something like a seatbelt or a smoke detector for patient safety. The way I think about patient safety is very, very different. Most of what I see in the patient safety movement community, and I want to be clear about this, I admire the people in the patient safety community. I have great admiration, respect, affection, and all those things. They're working on a very, very difficult problem. This is not intended to convey the slightest bit of disrespect to anyone in that field. But at the same time, I have to wonder, when the quantities of money that are spent on patient safety are staggering, the results are disappointing, a lot of people are still being injured and killed, I have to wonder and ask, might there be a better way? And out of loyalty to my son and my father and all the clients I've represented who've been injured or worse by medical errors, I feel like I have a moral obligation to stand up and say, is there a better way, without disrespecting anybody? And I bring this from my philosophy background, from a philosopher, absolute genius, named Larry Powers in Detroit. And Larry says that the interesting thing about logical fallacies is not that they're wrong, but how they're seductive, how they seduce us to believe false and incorrect things. So I wonder sometimes about how is it that we as humans make mistakes. And I was thinking about that the other day, and I arrived at the conclusion is the same thing that makes us smart makes us make mistakes. And here's what I arrived at. I think about, you're driving down the street, you're in a hurry to get somewhere. There may be all kinds of information coming in through your eyes about the colors of houses, the colors of porches, the colors of bricks, the colors of roofs, whether or not kids are playing in the front yard, etc. And what you do as you drive down the street is you focus on what's in front of you and you ignore all the rest. And that's what enables you to get where you're going and to get where you're going in a hurry. One of the things we have to have trained is we have to have our peripheral vision trained, so that if a kid runs out into the street, that somehow our eyesight, somehow our reflexes are set up to catch it and to prevent it. But I think we ought to make no mistake that what enables us to succeed as human beings, when we focus on an issue, on hyper-focus on one subject, is we're ignoring everything else. And what I see happening over and over again with medical errors, if we set aside the error part of it and just say, okay, intellectually, what's this person thinking about and what's this person not thinking about? And the same thing that produces genius produces mistakes, focusing on a part of the picture. So, you know, when I arrive at that conclusion, it becomes obvious to me that we are not going to prevent medical errors and people from being hurt by just being better, faster, smarter. The same thing that makes us smart makes us error-prone. Focusing, ignoring things that we're judging to be irrelevant, that 99.9% of the time are irrelevant, but when it's your mom or your dad or your cousin, that might be the 0.1% of the time when some little piece of information out there comes running into the street in front of the car, the doctor's driving down the street, in terms of providing the medical care. we have to put up fences so that when those kids are starting to run in front of the street, they can't. Okay, they can't. They can't without coming to the driver's attention. So I apologize for all the analogies, but what I've seen over and over again, I saw it with my son, I saw it with my father, and I see it in all my clients, is that there's some important respect about what the doctor was doing that made sense from a certain perspective. But there was another important respect in which it was not accurate, it didn't reflect what was going on with the patient, and the doctor, in his or her genius, decided to, well, I'm not going to let that information get into my consciousness. The same thing that makes us smart makes us error-prone. We will never stamp out errors as long as we're humans and we're trying to focus on things we can't. It's impossible. Sorry.
Lee, give us some of your thoughts on how we can stay safe.
The first thing is to have a thought process that is a worst-case scenario thought process. And to do that, you may want to look at your informed consent sheet, because usually the doctors list the things that can go wrong on the informed consent sheet. You may want to do a little medical research, but you want to be on very much heightened guard for any early warning signs that any of those bad things that are associated with either what your diagnosis is or what procedure is going to be performed on you. What are the early warning signs of them? The second thing I would do before going in the hospital is make sure that I have access to a laptop computer that can do a little bit of medical research and look up the significance of some abnormal sign or symptom and look up the significance of it for the procedure I'm undergoing, whatever that is. And maybe to have a doctor friend available that you can call on the phone, or a nurse friend or relative that you can call on the phone and say, I need help with this. Is this something to worry about? A third thing that for me is the most important is keeping a list of all the abnormal signs and symptoms you have. Whatever diagnosis you have, it's going to be the best explanation of all those signs and symptoms. And you come first. Your being in the hospital is not about a ruptured appendix or diabetes or about anything else. It's about you and your symptoms and your pain and whatever abnormalities exist in you. And they may use those medical concepts to explain it, but the first time that they say, this doesn't fit the ordinary diagnostic procedure, sir, you know, you're just a little bit outside how we think about this disease process, they are thinking about it wrong, because they've decided what matters the most are their concepts and not you, the patient. But be on guard. The whole thing is about what your abnormals are. One of the things I've done frequently is I started a correspondence with the authors of the articles, and it's not hard to do. If you go to PubMed.gov, and you look at the abstract version of the articles, there's email address. And a lot of those people will correspond with you about the subject matters of their articles. And I've had on several occasions international leaders who've written some of the leading articles contact the client and say, how can I help you? Last month, there was a mother whose son was diagnosed with a brain malformation. And within 1 hour of my sending out some emails for her, the head of the NIH research program emailed us and said, send me the MRI. I want to look at it for you. And now that young man is enrolled for free in an NIH research project, getting the best care available probably on the planet, certainly in the United States, for free, because the information's out there and you take advantage of it. I would look up before I go into a hospital again. I would look up the patient safety officer's phone numbers, email addresses, and some top administrators at the hospital, maybe somebody in risk management, patient safety, quality care, and I would have a way to contact them. There are all these incentives to make you not want to bother, upset, disturb, whatever, the doctor. You need to have your perspective changed. You need to understand that family member that's there needs you, and needs you maybe to be willing to upset a few people to save their life. I failed my father. And that will haunt me for the rest of my days. And anybody that's afraid to call up a hospital president at home to save their father's life, to save their mother's life, to save their child's life, you haven't really thought about the torment you're going to have for the entire rest of your life. Make sure you know how to contact them so you don't have to go through the staff that's trying to tell you everything's okay when you know better.
Well, I applaud what you're saying, and I hope that people take that to heart and feel empowered and strong enough to be able to do that. Lee, how can our listeners learn more about you and what you do?
I have a blog right now at rethinkingpatientsafety.com. I'm going to be putting up some new blogs, Prevent Patient Injuries and People and Truth Matter, reflecting my core values. But I want to move to, instead of just rethinking, I want to move to something that is actually my process, Prevent Patient Injuries. And that's where I'm going to be going in the future. Right now, it's Rethinking Patient Safety. And I want to thank you for all you do. I looked at all the literature that you put out on your website. I looked at all the advice. You're a remarkable lady. I salute you. And I would wager a lot of money that you saved quite a few lives.
Well, I appreciate that. You and I together, we will continue our friendship and our relationship. And hopefully I can have you back on the show if you're willing to do that.
Anytime.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Lee Tilson, for your excellent words of advice here today. We appreciate your being here.
Thank you for having me. But more importantly, thank you for the lives you saved.
Thank you. This is Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay tuned for emails and everyone's favorite game, Fear the Wheelchair. Do you or a loved one need to rehabilitate after a hospital stay and don't know where to go? With so many choices, how do you safely choose? Well, I have the answer. The Welsh Home, located in Rocky River, Ohio. Let's spend the next 2 minutes with Lauren Teschner to get some advice. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Lauren, how does the Welsh Home help patients transition back home?
We establish goals on day one of them admitting to the Welsh Home and make sure that they can reach those goals before they go home. And we do that through physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, nursing needs, and also the social work piece of it. We have a social worker on staff who's going to make sure that the patient is safe to go home, make sure that they have all the equipment in their home that they're going to need once they return home, and make sure that it's going to be a successful transition. We would never want to transition someone back to their home that we knew was not going to succeed. So we want to make sure that we do our best to accomplish their goals for a safe return home.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
You're welcome.
The Welsh Home offers state-of-the-art skilled rehabilitation therapy on-site to meet the individual needs of each and every resident. Whether you are looking for short-term or long-term care, the Welsh Home can help. And you don't have to be Welsh to call the Welsh Home your home. Call them to arrange for a tour. 440-331-0420. That's 440-331-0420. Or visit welshhome.com. Make a splash with a season pass that screams fun. Pioneer Waterland and Drive Fun Park in Chardon, Ohio has discounted season passes. Buy now and save. Family pass for $4, $195. Additional family member and individual passes discounted too. That includes a free parking pass for the entire season. Order your season passes today at pioneerwaterland.com or by phone 440-285-5200. That's 440-285-5200. What do you think of television drug ads? Should they be banned? Yes or no? Well, here's a brief audio answer to that question from one of our live presentations last week. This is Pat Rulo, and we are at a presentation today. We just had a great presentation, a beautiful group of people. And I've got a few folks that want to answer the question that is, what do you think about drug ads on television?
On the ads on TV and radio, when they're trying to sell you a particular medicine and do not tell you all the side effects. Even if they told you the side effects, they should know what medication you're taking at the present time and see whether that medication is not conducive with the other medication that you're taking. And they don't do that.
They have no idea what you're taking because they're just talking to a mass group of people. And did you have a question or comment about that?
I was just going to say I appreciate seeing some of the drug advertisements on TV because they're very informative to me.
Mm-hmm.
Things that I didn't know and things the doctor would not tell me.
Any other thoughts?
I just purchased prescription after seeing a doctor, and it scared me to death. I had gone to the pharmacy and had the prescription filled, and I think it's very good that they have the ads on TV. I don't intend to take the medication.
Any other thoughts? Go ahead.
I don't think they should have ads at all. There's not enough education that comes along with them, and that's how I see it. Even though they give the side effects, if you really listen to them, they scare you to death. So no, I don't think they should have them unless they have the education piece that goes along with it, a little more extensive than what they have now.
How much can you learn in 30 seconds?
Right, you can't. You can't. They should pull them all. I don't know why it's really not necessary. If people need them, they're going to buy it. You don't have to advertise it.
I agree with that. Any other thoughts? We're good. Thank you. So somewhat of a mixed viewpoint. Well, did we get any emails about this question, Joe?
Of course we did. Marty from Medina writes, prescription drug ads are to health education as Coke commercials are to nutrition education.
Well, and education being the key word, advertising is not education, especially when in many cases the benefits are described in a sixth grade language and the side effects are rapidly spewed at a ninth grade language.
Lacey from Parma says the solution to this problem is simply get rid of your television. Life is so much more peaceful, happy, and healthy without television. This is one of the best home remedies with no lasting side effects. Instead of watching TV, listen to the radio.
Oh, yes, Lacey, especially if you're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Joe?
Grandpa Mike wrote, I just want to watch the game and not be forced into a birds and bees discussion with my grandkids.
I hear you, Grandpa. What is Cialis? Seriously?
Maria 23 wrote, my father lives out of state, and every time he gets a new prescription, he tries a different pharmacy to take advantage of any incentives they offer. I'm a little worried that things might get mixed up.
Yes, Maria, you are right to be concerned. Make sure your father is getting all of his medications from the same pharmacy, or at least the same pharmacy chain. Most pharmacies now have computerized systems designed to alert you if there's a possibility of any sort of drug interaction.
Loretta T. asks, my doctor recommended surgery, and I don't like the idea. Will he be upset if I get another opinion? Should I tell him?
Well, Loretta, when surgery is recommended, patients often seek a second opinion. Hearing the views of two different doctors can help you decide what's best for you. Doctors are used to this, and most will not be insulted by your request for a second opinion. Your doctor may even be able to suggest other doctors who can review your case. In fact, your insurance plan may require it. Always remember to check with your insurance provider in advance, though, to find out whether a second opinion is covered under your policy and if you need a referral form from your primary doctor.
Stanley in Erie says, here's an important if. If learning of a new erectile dysfunction drug prompts a viewer to make an appointment with a physician, he may also receive the benefit of an overdue prostate exam.
Well, as Bob says, if ands and buts, needles and nuts, we all know what screening tests we should be getting. Unfortunately, there is no pill to instill common sense and good judgment. Joe is cracking up. Any other goodies, Joe?
No.
Yes, there's lots more, but we have to get to what, Joe?
Fear the wheelchair.
Yep, crazy times. By now, you've probably heard me talk about how I fear the wheelchairs that grace the front doors of almost every hospital. Patients and visitors get out of their cars and hop into a wheelchair, and I always wonder, where have they been? What have they touched? When was the last time those jeans were washed? Then they wheel around the hospital, use the bathroom, sit in waiting rooms, visit patients, all the while picking up additional and deadly hospital bacteria like MRSA, C. diff, a bit of E. coli, and perhaps some candida yeast. And at the end of the day, they're back in their car, leaving the contaminated wheelchair at the front door of the hospital, ready for the next person to climb aboard. This makes the wheelchair a high-touch, highly contaminated vehicle, capable of spreading infections all over the place. So, the wheelchair is now this show's representation of all hospital dangers, kind of like our mascot. So here we go, our new favorite game.
Fear the wheelchair.
Listen as Joe reads some of these true or false statements, and then, even though I can't hear you, shout out your answer along with Bob. Is the statement right or wrong? Joe?
All right, here we go. Right or wrong, shift change is a dangerous time because nurses are changing clothes.
Ooh, what do you think, Bobby?
Oh, that's wrong.
Of course that's wrong. Mistakes happen during these handoffs, not because nurses are changing their clothes, but because they are changing their frame of mind. Outgoing nurses may be thinking about picking up their kids or what to make for dinner. Incoming nurses are flooded with new information about many patients. And as an advocate, use this time to inform and remind the new shift of any important changes. And if you can't be there, like I said, leave notes on the bed tray and call a few hours later to make sure the team is well informed.
Right or wrong, an advocate should be willing to upset a few people to save the patient's life.
Oh, that's definitely right.
Yes, Bob, that is right. And sometimes that's hard to do. Our guest, Lee Tilson, talked about this. He said, make sure to know how to contact the hospital's top administrators so you don't have to go through the staff who might tell you that everything's okay when in fact it might not be. And don't be afraid to make that phone call. Even if it's in the middle of the night, you may only get one chance to save someone's life.
Right or wrong, is it rude to ask your doctor questions about your medications? It implies that you don't trust him or her.
What do you think, Bob?
I think that's right.
All right, Bob, how is it rude to ask about something you plan to put in your body? Always ask. This is not the time to worry about rudeness or implications. It's your life, so ask away.
Right or wrong, keep a list of abnormal signs and symptoms while in the hospital.
What do you think, Bob?
It's wrong.
Oh, my, you were doing so well. That is right, Bob. Abnormal signs and symptoms are what point to the diagnosis. Besides, the list will be much shorter and easier to manage than a list of what is normal.
All right, right or wrong, a patient's advocate should be present when the doctor makes rounds.
What do you think, Bobby?
I think that's right, but what do you mean? What is a round?
Well, yes, that is right. And rounds are the daily visit by the attending physician and the team. A term I think they use because the doctors go round and round and can't figure out what's wrong or what needs to be done. And then they never really finish rounds. They just repeat them day after day. Therefore, an advocate should always be there and keep track of what is said, ask questions, and act as a break into the never-ending circle, which, Bob, is also round. We're getting crazy here. Remember, the more you know, the safer you'll be. And you heard about it here on Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Well, thank you guys for playing our super fun game.
Fear the wheelchair.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am Pat Rulo, where the boys and I are keeping you safe during any healthcare or hospital encounter.
Tired of the same old presentations?
Can you forward to slide 38, please?
Are you looking for a new, out-of-the-box topic for your next event?
Want your group to leave inspired, informed, and satisfied?
No PowerPoint presentations and dim lights here. No snoring or snoozing goes on during Pat's presentations. To help your entire group, organization, business, or church stay safe during any healthcare or hospital experience, invite Pat to speak. Her presentation formats vary from 15-minute small talks to 30-minute lunch and learns, to one-hour events called The Scoop, to full days. Pick a topic from her website or request your own. Visit her website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call Pat to discuss how she can make your next event fun, enlightening, and life-saving.
Want testimonials?
Go to the bulletin board link at the website for color pictures and comments from real people. Again, it's speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462.
Well, today we're here talking with the members in the audience, and so we're just going to go around and see what folks might have to say about the patient experience and what that means to folks. You used to be in the healthcare industry prior to being the activity director here. Yeah. Let's talk about the patient experience. What does that mean to you?
I always say that I want people to treat the patient as they would treat their own grandmother. When you're in that kind of experience, you hope that you get the best care possible. And this is what I do here. I treat everybody the same way I would want somebody to treat my grandparents. I would rather be treated by a really small family-type hospital that doesn't have all the glitz and glam and know that I'm going to be well taken care of and loved and the sincerity that comes from the heart versus being in the Ritz and left laying in my room and not being taken care of. I think that part of the patient experience would be that as soon as you ring that button, somebody comes into your room and doesn't leave you laying there.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
So we're talking about the patient experience here. What does that mean to you?
Well, that means how a patient is treated, and the nurses and everything treat you, and their capabilities on what they're supposed to be doing. Now, I was in the hospital 2 years ago with colon cancer, and I was operated on. The head one would tell you when you have to get up to go to the bathroom, you call somebody to come and help you get up, because I was in pain. I couldn't hardly move, you know, without help. One of them would come down the hallway, and I'd ring the buzzer, and they'd come in after a bit, and I'd say, I need help getting up out of bed. Oh, I'll go ahead and get up. You can make it. And they'd go on. They'd tell you, one person would tell you one thing not to do, and the other person would tell you something else. One of them come in there, and I had to go urinate. And I went in there, and they had this curtain, and they usually pulled it around where you had some privacy. And this one, she stood there, and I said, you're going to pull it across? Ah, oh, no, just stand there and redneck it. And if I'd been 30 years younger, it might I might have went for that. But to me, that was, I said I'd never go back to the hospital, and I never will.
Well, to tell a patient to go ahead and redneck it when they're going to the bathroom, I don't think that's part of a patient experience. Well, that's an experience, all right. Thank you. We've got someone else that wants to talk about their thoughts on the patient experience. Here we go.
Well, about 2 years ago, I had an infection, went to the doctor, and they immediately put me in the hospital. I was there for almost 3 weeks, and the first 2 weeks went just great. They were in and out of the room and doing this and doing that and just being friendly as they could get. Then all of a sudden, they put this thing outside my door, and they put these little masks and the outfits that people have to put on, and I'm like, what's going on? So anyway, after that, everybody disappeared. And it's like, I'm 3 days, I haven't had a bath. I'm 3 days, I haven't had my sheets changed. The room hasn't been cleaned. So I finally called down to the desk and asked what was going on. And they said, oh, nothing. Did you need something? I said, well, I just checking to see if everybody was here because nobody's been in my room for 3 days. I mean, when my meals came, they were set outside the door, gently pushed in there.
It sounds like you were in an isolation room for contact precaution. You either had something like MRSA or C. diff where they were concerned, but obviously you were not told about this?
No, and they was not going to come in and be friendly anymore either. Well, I'm the same person I was 3 days ago. What's going on?
Did you ever find out?
Yeah, I finally found out when they said, we have one more thing we can try, and if it doesn't work, that's it. But I finally got a bath.
Thank goodness. You're smelling good to me today. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. That doesn't sound like much of a positive experience.
No.
So we just talked with a gal who was in contact precaution and didn't know why. What are your thoughts on that?
It makes me angry that the hospital and the facility didn't answer her questions or come in and educate her. Being a patient doesn't mean you just get thrown in a room. I mean, it's a matter of educating the patient as well, explaining to them what's going on, why they're here, why they're being isolated. They didn't give her any information. Just makes me really angry, and I'm really glad that you're here to get these stories and bring it to the public and let others know that they're not alone and that there has to be some kind of, you know, speaking up and talking about it.
Thank you. Well, we've got one gal here that has an interesting way to improve her patient experience.
Well, I always do something my mother taught me. She'd worked in a hospital for several years before she was married, and she said there you have to have honey to catch flies, and you buy a box of good chocolates, not the cheap ones, the good ones. Put them on the tray, and a nurse will be in every 8 or 10 minutes to get a piece of candy.
And that's the way to attract the flies, huh? Or the nurses. Good idea. And what is your name?
My name's Valerie.
What is it that you want from a patient experience?
I want to be healed. I want to come out better than when I came in. I don't want to worry about if I have Wi-Fi in my room or if the people who are sitting outside in the waiting room have the latest magazines. I want to be sure that the nurse is there every time she needs to be, that the therapy is done, that he gets the right medication. I don't want him to have to wait when lunch is supposed to come at noon until 2 o'clock because I can see the trays out there and they won't even let you take one and bring it into him. I want care.
And I can sense your passion. Anytime any of us have been in the hospital, we know that all you want is to be treated as somebody might treat their own mother or father. Is there anything that you picked up during today's presentation that you could use to perhaps stay safe the next time you are in the hospital with your husband?
I had never thought about what you talked about pre-cleaning. And I had seen the hospital staff clean every day, and they kind of come in and dust. They use the same bucket to wash the floor in every single room. From now on, when we go to the hospital, I'm going to bring a can of those Clorox pads. And I'm not going to let Reg get out of the chair until I can wipe down every surface in there with Clorox, especially his favorite instrument, the little TV button. Box that he uses. That's his favorite tool there.
The TV remote. Yes. We talked about putting that in a plastic baggie. Bring some baggies with you.
Yes. So these are really great ideas, and especially because this is something for us that's going to be ongoing. I wish I had known about this before. There's so much information here that would have made my husband safer, and in the future that's going to make me safer if I need to go into the hospital.
I'm glad then that you were able to attend today, and hope that you read the book and listen to the radio shows, and I appreciate your speaking with us today. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much for coming and giving us this information.
Today, we talked about the role of a patient advocate and why it's important to have someone with us during every hospital visit. And our guest, Lee Tilson, our new favorite patient activist philosopher, helped us to look at patient safety in a bit of a different way. If you missed some of today's show, or if you want to replay it for yourself or a friend in need, simply go to the radio link at the speakupandstayalive.com website and listen to today's program. You might want to do that anyway, just to help you remember more of today's indispensable information. Start your weekend with an O, Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. That's next Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern on AM 1220 WHKW. I am Pat Rulo, your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.